Let me put this thing here. And our next case is James D. Cox versus Commonwealth. Mr. Dillon and Ms. Kiernan.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Is it Dillon?
Dillon, Your Honor.
Dillon. That's easy to pronounce.
Yes.
Thank you. Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal, Mr. Dillon?
Yes, 5 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Verinder S. Dillon. I represent the appellant James Davis Cox in the matter before you today. Your Honor, when we look at these cases, this case here, it's really quite simple.
In fact, doesn't it boil down to that old application of that old Chinese proverb, one showing is worth a thousand tellings, and so the evidence was carried just looking at this firearm and applying reasonable sense?
Well, we have to look at the firearm. We have to look at what the testimony before the trial judge and the evidence that was presented before the trial judge in making that determination. My argument before the court today is that the judge's finding in this case that the firearm in question was indeed designed to be a shoulder-fired weapon, therefore prohibited from possession due to the length of his burial, was clearly erroneous. The fact that the firearm, or perhaps the picture of the firearm in question, was admitted to evidence is not enough to sustain a conviction in this matter. The trial court largely ignored the large amount of exculpatory evidence in the record. In this case, what was admitted was a picture of a New England Pardner Model 20 gauge shotgun.
And that's the picture that shows that it's clearly originally designed as a shoulder fire weapon.
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor, at least according to that picture. However, the only witness to testify in this case was Officer Donald, who I vouched to be qualified as an expert in this case, was not officially qualified an expert in this case by the trial court, was allowed to testify as if he was an expert in firearms in this case.
Well, he didn't give his opinion.
He
testified as the facts.
That's a good question, Your Honor. He testified his opinion on the picture that he admitted or laid the foundation for the advertisement that I think
let me just cut to the chase, tell you why I'm having problems here. The officer testified, and it's on page 32 of the appendix, and in describing the photograph of what is clearly a shoulder-fired shotgun, said, and this is without objection, and that is what it looks like, and that's what the picture of the actual shotgun looked like. Then we have introduced a picture of the shotgun as it was seized from the defendant, which clearly shows that there has been a cut made at the pistol grip, and it's electrical tape applied. Why can't the court use that unobjected testimony in conjunction with the photograph to conclude that it was originally designed as a shoulder-fired weapon?
Because the officer made a conclusory statement that it does not match the picture. The one we have in question.
No, he didn't. He didn't say it didn't match the picture. He said that picture is what it originally looked like, and that was introduced yes. without objection.
Well, Your Honor, on cross-examination, when I sought qualification as to this officer's knowledge as to this weapon, what we realized is that there could be multiple factory variants of this particular weapon. The fact that one picture of this weapon, one example of this particular weapon was introduced, does that mean that's all examples of this particular
the
weapon?
The court relied on the actual firearm, yes, Exhibit 2. Wasn't that the actual firearm?
Your Honor, there's a picture of the actual firearm with the, I think, a ruler above it.
That's yeah, I know this picture. I thought the actual firearm was introduced.
I believe it was near the end, Your Honor.
It was introduced. It doesn't matter when.
So you're suggesting that the factory may have generated this with the shoulder piece cut off and electric tape put on?
Your Honor, if I may, I asked the officer, are you aware of the existence of pistol-fired shotguns? He said, yes, there are pistol-fired variants. I'm not sure if the court has any familiarity with shotguns, but the old Stagecoach shotguns were pistol-fired variants of shotguns. And I think that's important, because I think the legislator has spoken. If it's a pistol-fired variant, it has a particular barrel length less than 14 inches, then it's not to be prohibited under this statute. It has to be specifically designed as a shoulder-fired weapon to be prohibited, and to be a person to be in possession of, to be liable for a felony. In this case, what we have is the officer's testimony that He was, A, unfamiliar with the different variants of this particular factory, the different factory variants of this particular firearm. B, that he was unfamiliar with the different types of wood and the stock lengths available on this particular firearm. And three, that he did not know if the firearm in question's barrel was cut off, or if it was milled, or if any modifications had been made to the barrel.
That's not exactly what he said. He said, it looks like, from what I know of long rifles, someone has cut this and taped it back up with black electrical tape.
I believe he was referring to the stock on that, Your Honor.
Well, isn't that what we're talking? We're talking about the stock?
Yes, but the point is, Your Honor, if he doesn't know what the original stock looked like or the different stocks that were available from the factory, then would we know what's cut from? Perhaps it was cut from one pistol grip to another pistol grip. Now, there's tape on it. It could have been, for example, an aid in the grip of the handling the firearm. It does not necessarily imply that this thing was modified simply because the stock appeared cut. And that's the point of this, is that we don't know what the original factory firearm looked like. And the Commonwealth could have easily remedied that issue by running that serial number, or perhaps running the serial number, contacting the factory that designed the firearm, and finding out what exactly this firearm looked like in the description of the firearm.
Well, I thought that's what the officer did when he pulled out that picture of the shotgun as it was originally manufactured.
He found one example online that says it does not match this picture. And then his knowledge as to that firearm is qualified on cross-examination. And that's where my issue comes up. It's simply that he doesn't know anything about this firearm. He knows it doesn't match one picture he found online, therefore it was designed as a shoulder-fired weapon. The point is, Your Honor, each manufacturer designs more than one gun, and each gun usually comes in multiple variants. And that was the point of my cross-examination of Officer Donald in this matter, was to determine, look, essentially, I don't know about the different factory variants in this firearm. And when I asked the officer, could you describe the front of the stock, the front of the barrel, he described it as smooth and could not determine whether that firearm, at least the barrel, was modified.
He said it was machined.
Your Honor, he says, if I don't...
Smooth. He says it was smooth, and then he said the barrel was... You see the edge of it, it's machined. What does that mean?
I guess I don't know exactly what that means.
The firearm, something external, some equipment was applied to that barrel.
Well, every barrel that's in existence has to be machined at one point.
Well, certainly, I'm assuming, but I thought he was talking about the issue that we're about as to whether it's been sawed off.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's the reason I asked him the question. I said, can you tell us what the original length of the barrel was and the different factory variants? He didn't know.
He didn't know, but he knew what the barrel was.
But the barrel's not an issue, is
it?
We're talking about the other end of the gun.
Well, Your Honor, in the motion to strike, and that's a very good question, in the motion to strike, I argued that it could have been a pistol-fired variant as opposed to a shoulder-fired variant. I specifically spoke about the machining on the barrel in the motion to strike. The reason I addressed the machining of the barrel is that it's two factors to determine whether this is a pistol-fired shotgun versus a shoulder-fired shotgun. The two factors I would consider is the barrel length and the stock appearance. And the point is, the officer doesn't know. And, Your Honor, this is a case the Commonwealth could have remedied both by researching the serial number for this particular shotgun. Every firearm in the United States, well, most firearms in the United States, have a serial number on the firearm, and that is able to be traced back to the factory. In the alternative, the Commonwealth could have rectified its case in this matter by having an expert qualified in this matter to determine, look, I'm familiar with every variant of the firearms of the New England partner model 20-gauge shotgun, and they're all designed as shoulder-fired weapons. That simply did not happen. They had a way to do it. They didn't do it.
Could given the fact that the shotgun itself was introduced in evidence, could the trial court simply apply some common sense in looking at the bottom of that pistol grip and seeing the saw marks there and coming to an inference that someone has cut it off?
The inference that, yes, you can look at a trial judge or anybody with common sense can look at this gun and say, somehow the stock of this particular firearm has been modified.
Okay, why isn't that in and of itself enough?
Because the question is, we don't know what it was modified from, whether it was modified from one particular pistol grip stock to another pistol grip stock. Your Honor, and I think what has happened is the court went beyond common sense in this matter. If the officer who was allowed to testify as if he were an expert on the matter did not know the different factory variants, did not know the size of stocks available, the type of wood stocks that were available, nor the barrel length, I would submit to the court that the trial judge, using common sense, is essentially saying, my common sense exceeds your expertise on this issue. Common sense is something that is common to every person. It doesn't exceed an expert's expertise on firearms.
I wish that were true.
Yes, Your Honor. But we have to look at...
I want to get back to, the machining wasn't at the pistol grip end of the...
No, Your Honor. I
thought it was at that end that he was looking at.
No. I think when we refer to the stock, we refer to the cut or modifications to the stock. The machining was specifically referring to the barrel of the firearm.
Barrel. I thought it was at the other end. No.
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Dunn, you're into your rebuttal. You may continue if you wish, or reserve the remainder.
Okay, Your Honor, I'll reserve my rebuttal. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Karen.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Elizabeth Kiernan and I represent the Commonwealth in this appeal. The trial court in this case had plenty of evidence before it to decide the factual issue that this firearm met the statutory definition of a sawed-off shotgun, and in particular that the barrel, or the stock rather, had originally been designed for a shoulder-fired weapon. First, the gun itself, as the court discussed, was admitted into evidence, and that's on appendix page 22. The court could observe that gun and the weight that the court placed on that physical evidence, on that factual issue. It's for the fact finder to decide. In Taylor, this court held that when the actual firearm is in evidence, there doesn't need to be any more evidence. The fact finder can look at that exhibit and place what weight on it they may. And in this case, the court clearly found that this firearm had been designed to be a shoulder-fired weapon. The court also had before it the picture that the police officer pulled of what this firearm looked like as originally manufactured. As the court noted, he pulled the make and model number and found this shotgun. If it had been a different barrel length or a different grip or something, presumably it would be a different make and model number. There's no evidence in the record that the make and model number of this particular firearm did not encompass all of the maybe extraneous variants that could exist. The court looking at that firearm as it originally existed and what it had before it right there could easily come to the factual conclusion that this firearm had been modified. And finally, as the court noted, we have the testimony from the police officer that in his experience, guns do not come from the factory looking like this. It had been modified. It was cut up. It was taped with electrical tape. It had a laser pointer taped to the barrel of the gun. It was simply had been modified, and it was a sawed-off shotgun. The trial court found as a factual matter, and there's plenty of evidence to support its factual finding. Does the court have any particular questions?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
You got your 5 minutes left, Mr. Dillon.
Thank you, Your Honors. If I may, to say that the make and model of this firearm in that picture that was the advertisement that was submitted to the trial court means that this particular firearm in this case was designed to look as if it was originally designed to look as if it was on that picture or similar to the picture, I think is incorrect. Each firearm is different. Serial number, the fact that it was the same make and model.
How do we know that?
And that's the point. We don't know that. And that's the Commonwealth's burden, I would submit to the court.
Well, the Commonwealth introduced the photograph, and the testimony from the officer is this is a photograph of the gun as originally manufactured. Now, you want us to go beyond that and speculate that perhaps it could have been a different model?
Your Honor, it's not speculation, because when we ask the officer, what other types of guns are there of this factory variants of this particular firearm? He doesn't know. It's not what speculation is assuming that this gun did not match one example of this firearm. Therefore, it was
said he doesn't know. Only goes to how much weight the trial court can give to that testimony. That's all. Doesn't mean it's not worthy.
That's true, Your Honor. But the trial court cannot arbitrarily disregard that evidence from the same witness.
Simply disregard. He had positive evidence that this is a picture of the original gun as would have been manufactured with that number?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, and that's true. But he's given, at that point, he's making a conclusory statement that does not match this picture, therefore it was designed as a shoulder-fired weapon. That's his conclusion. But we have to look at his level of knowledge at this particular firearm. And the point is, he didn't have it. He didn't know it. It didn't match one picture, so therefore it must have been a shoulder-fired variant. That is incorrect, Your Honor. There was a way for him to do it. It was a way for the Commonwealth to look up that particular firearm by the serial number, not by the make and model, but rather by the serial number. Then there would be no discrepancy between the way the firearm looked from the factory, or description from the factory, and the way it appeared before the court on that day. And Your Honor, based on this, based on the representations I've made to this court today, I am asking this court to vacate the conviction in this case. I would submit to this court that the Commonwealth failed to meet its burden at the trial court level, and that even at this point, there is simply too much exculpatory evidence on the record, and that the trial court cannot arbitrarily disregard the lack of knowledge of this witness on this particular farm simply because that testimony becomes exculpatory. If some of his testimony is believable, it doesn't simply become incredible simply because it's exculpatory at that point.
All right. Thank you very much.